It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
So this week it was not James Shaw, but I spoke to Green Party co-leader Martima Davidson about the Christchurch terror attacks and what the government's response has been to the event. We also talk about the school's strike for climate action, which a couple of Fridays ago, and I began by asking what has the government's role been in responding to the terror attack?
Yeah, sure. Well, the government is in charge of a lot of policy that absolutely has to change. Of course, we've seen the gun law reform to ban semi-automatic weapons. I think that was fantastic and absolutely essential. I mean, we all worked together. I've been very clear since the start that we have to overview our entire surveillance system, and we have to have a really clear understanding on why these signs, any signs of this white supremacist terrorist, were not picked up, and why the Muslim community seem to have been warning us for many, many, many years, and also understanding who are we piling the resources into to be surveilled in the first place. In my mind, I have some really big questions around who has been targeted with surveillance. I know for a fact that we often target Māori, Pacific peoples, people of colour, certainly the Muslim community, environmental activists, and of course our own people from the Green Party. So big questions, and government has an absolute responsibility to step up to those questions. We have got some serious problems on our online platforms, and they're a massive part of allowing this hate and extremist thinking to fester. So we've got to do some serious look at how we can stop these platforms being dangerous and violent. And I think anything that the government can do to put some pressure on these platforms is going to be really important for us. We also need to have a look at the way that we do politics ourselves as politicians, as political parties. I'm reminded that often when people sit and watch us in the House at question time, they come away quite appalled and disgusted with our behaviour towards each other, the shouting, the point scoring, you know. And so there's a lot of reflection, I think, that the way that we do politics, we have to look at that. We have to look at the language that we use to whip up fear and division. Are we blaming immigrants and people of colour for housing crises, shortages of homes? Are we blaming groups of people for any of our social ills and detracting from the real causes of those harm, which is essentially the inequality and the rate that inequality is happening in our country? Are we using political campaigns to marginalise a whole group of people? So that's, you know, those are just some of the starting points that we have a responsibility to look at, to change as politicians and as government.
So going back to that idea of surveillance and working on how surveillance works in New Zealand, and also internet platforms and what we're doing about the rhetorics that are being sort of published on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and those various social medias, What does that mean for the New Zealand government to be able to do something about that and stop that from happening, when a lot of those companies are big international companies that are obviously New Zealanders, many, many New Zealanders are part of, but it's not something that comes directly under our law or was created directly under our law?
I think what it comes down to is that we've just had an incredible, abhorrent violent act in our country, and I think that gives us an incredible mandate and opportunity to really pressure and get public support. You know, that's what will pressure those companies alongside the government insistence as well, is people just no longer tolerating the algorithms that group these extremist thoughts and content and target them at people who are feeling already quite alone and isolated, and this becomes something for them to have purpose for, these hateful views. So I think there's there's a lot that we can do, actually. And I think that it also then needs to be a global effort, that our leadership as a country is simply part of a global effort in calling these platforms to account, and people, ordinary people, demanding better of these organisations is going to be a big part of that.
Let's talk a little bit more about what society's reaction has been to the terrorist attack. In the last week, there have been many events, rallies and vigils around the country regarding racism and white supremacy that I understand that you have attended. What do you think that society's response generally to this awful, awful, tragic event has been?
Well, it's been, in the first instance, one of incredible love, actually, and heartfelt devastation. You know, people are grieving, and love and devastation and grief has been the immediate response of New Zealanders, and that stuff has made me incredibly proud and incredibly sad that it has taken this travesty, this abhorrence, to bring us even to this sort of a starting point. We've also seen responses from the Muslim community, from tangata whenua, from Pacific peoples, from migrants of colour, and other groups who are also angry and actually queer, I should actually say, because I think the word angry is often used to silence these groups. But there's a lot of clarity also from these communities that we've been racist and ignorant and hatred towards particular groups this whole time, and that there is a link between the colonial violence that founded this modern Aotearoa, modern New Zealand, the ongoing and daily racial microaggressions that happen, particularly towards people of colour, the systemic racism and violence that has been clear, for example, the health inequities in our systems, education inequities, our incarceration of Māori and so on. There have been people wanting to say, look, this needs to change, and surely this is an opportunity for New Zealanders to all help make these changes. Some of the raising of those truths has been met with discomfort. And so that has also, as we continue to have these debates and discussions, which we must, that has also come to the surface that, you know, some people are uncomfortable, but I'm really encouraged, actually, by the amount of people, individuals, and people that I've seen reflecting and saying, actually, I admit that I've been holding on to some long-standing ignorance and racist thoughts and attitudes in my own self.
You said, obviously, we need to keep talking about it, and I wonder whether that is that's a concern for many people where in New Zealand that it will sort of get lost and people will move on and they won't remember it and nothing will be done about sort of the law and the policy around terrorism and gun control and even hateful messages online.
We won't make the changes
quick enough, and that it'll just get passed on and we'll move on and we'll forget about it. And, you know, it'll always will exist, but nothing will be done about it, and that will be a huge problem. Do you think, I think that many people are worried that that will happen. Do you think that that is a likelihood?
Oh, listen, this is why when I hear it's too early to be political about this, actually, in some ways it's too late. And we lost 50 lives, and 50 more people have got several bullets inside them. In some ways it's too late, but so many of us are determined that no, it's not too late, that we have to absolutely make the enduring change, make the real change happen, remove racism from our community, come to terms with our colonial past, better connect to each other and learn about each other's communities and worldviews and ways of life to eliminate that fear, and absolutely no longer tolerate any level of racism. And I've written already about a kura kaupapa, a Māori school, who were at a mosque and had been going every day. And then on the day of the 2-minute nationwide silence, they were asked by an older Pākehā man to stop singing the anthem in Te Reo Māori. Those sorts of daily microaggressions, even as we grieve, even at the mosque, celebrating the lives of those lost and celebrating us coming together, we're still facing those racist daily microaggressions, and they harm. Those kids have been exposed to a view that says their language on their own land is not relevant, their culture on their own land is not relevant, the love and the grief and how they use their own tikanga to express their love and grief towards the Muslim community is not relevant. Those are incredibly harmful exposures for those young children. They've also been exposed to the fact that white people can feel entitled enough to shut their voices down. These are divisive and harmful exposures, and they have been happening for a long, long time. And we have to fix that.
And just finally, although this is a sensitive time, what happened on Friday morning of that day was the school strike for climate action, which was, I attended in Auckland, and it was a truly amazing thing. Could you just briefly tell me what your response to this was?
Listen, they are connected. You know, Jemima, we need to talk about that march. We need to talk about that day in the context of the tragedy as well, because they are absolutely connected. It was so incredibly symbolic and metaphorical that a white supremacist terrorist literally smothered the voices of young people rising up for climate action. And because the urgency of climate action, those kids, they got it. They understand, they are clear in their messaging and their understanding. They are clear that climate action is about loving the planet and loving the most vulnerable people on it. That climate action is about rejecting harsh capitalism and systems that destroy our climate. They know that it's all connected. And because the ideology behind white supremacy is the opposite of what they are asking for in taking climate action. White supremacy wants to divide us and seeks to commit terror on the earth and between people. Climate action needs to unite us and needs to uphold our earth and our climate and our environment as pinnacle to the future of our well-being.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.